Hello, and welcome to Out in the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen. This week, reimagining radio to help theater companies survive and thrive. With live performance venues closed for half a year now due to COVID-19, how are theater companies staying alive? Many are using relatively new technologies, performances on Zoom and other video conference platforms, for example, but at least one small theater company in San Francisco has turned to a much older medium to keep its creators and the audience engaged with each other. New Conservatory Theater Center, one of two LGBTQ-centered San Francisco theater companies, has launched an episodic podcast patterned in great part after serial radio dramas that were the rage in the 1930s and 40s. NCTC's serial, or episodic podcast, is called In Good Company. I think it's fair to say that it's autobiographical in a sense. It's about a small queer theater company struggling to survive a pandemic. We'll hear a scene from In Good Company in a few minutes. NCTC is also working on a radio version of The Law of Attraction, a stage play that was scheduled for its world premiere as part of NCTC's 2020-2021 season. It's slated for broadcast or release in some fashion this October. Here with me to talk about In Good Company are Ed Decker, founding artistic director of New Conservatory Theater Center. Welcome, Ed.
Thank you, Eric. It's great to be here.
And Jewel Gomez, one of five playwrights, have each written an episode or two or three of the 10-episode series. You may also know Jewel from her many writings, which include the Gilda stories about a Black lesbian slave vampire. Welcome, Jewel.
Hi, Eric. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks both of you for joining me here on Out in the Bay. So, Ed, let me start with you. As New Conservatory Theater Center's artistic director, what led you to consider and ultimately decide to launch an audio drama In Good Company?
Well, you know, New Conservatory Theater Center was one of the first venues that was shuttered back on March 7th based on the mayor's health directive because our theater is in a city building. So we were among, like I said, the first to be shut down. And then a week later, venues across the Bay Area as well as across the land followed suit. And as this was occurring, it seemed like every day there was sort of a new dynamic to understand and reckon with. And there was this sort of sense of change and fluidity happening almost constantly. And it sparked the idea of how does a theater company cope with all of these sudden changes when they are forced to look at the way they produce work in a very, very different way. So I just had this crazy idea, what if we created a soap opera of epic proportions where fact and fiction collided, and we actually sort of worked through what was going on in the world with a group of characters, theater folks from a theater that had been shut down for shelter in place. So that was the genesis of the idea. And I had the good fortune, Eric, of reaching out to five brilliant writers, of which Jewel is one of the team, and everyone eagerly said, wow, that sounds like a cool idea and kind of challenging to be creating sort of theater in the moment, of the moment, as we were all trying to just sort of figure out what was going on and what were the best ways of moving forward.
So this is radio drama by playwrights writing about their own dramas. How often does that happen?
Very rarely. We worked on this in the writer's room, you know, when you're putting together work, oftentimes you're sort of looking back, a little further back than we did as we were developing this piece. And as new information came to us day to day, we tried to have our characters, who are fictitious characters, deal with the sort of slings and arrows that were coming their way.
So, Jewel, I want to ask you, since you're the playwright for one of the episodes, that's the episode we're going to hear a scene from in a minute, how is writing for radio and podcast different than writing for live stage theater?
Well, it's kind of like the opposite of writing for live stage, because when you're doing something for the stage, you're constantly on the visual. Your mind is on the visual. And trying to show, not talk, so much. So it was really the reverse of figuring out how you could do succinct sentences that conveyed moods and plots and how to fill air, really. And it's kind of weird because, you know, playwriting is like writing poetry, really, so that the blank spaces between the lines has deep meaning. But when you're on air, you don't want a lot of blank spaces between lines. You want things to move. And I have to say, working with the other playwrights was so amazing because I got to see how other playwrights up close figured out how to maneuver these changes. So I felt like Eric and Tim and Elizabeth and Laurel were throwing down like crazy, and we were trying to keep the same tone and mood and everything and fill up all those air spaces.
So let's hear some. I'm going to play a scene from episode 4 of In Good Company. Before I do that, can you please give our listeners, either or both of you, a brief synopsis of what's transpired so far in the first 3 episodes? And by the way, I will let people know now that the first 2 episodes were released August 26th. The 3rd episode this Wednesday, the day that this show will air. And so the one you're about to hear will not actually be up and available until September 9th, I believe that is. So what's happened in the first 3 episodes?
The artistic director, Lola, an African-American lesbian, is trying to navigate her home life with her young son and difficulties with school and get to work on time and try to shepherd the production of a play by someone whom she mentored when he was in undergraduate school, but now he's hit it big and he thinks he's the cat's meow, and he's sent them a play that doesn't have an ending. And so she's been in rehearsal with these people and she's waiting for the playwright to arrive, and her cast is getting nervous because they don't have an ending. They don't know what they're supposed to be doing exactly. And then, of course, there's all the interpersonal connections, some good, some not so good, whenever you throw a bunch of people together to act. And finally, when the playwright shows up, he's as imperious and impossible a playwright as any stereotype you can imagine.
Okay. All right. So in this, keep that in mind, dear listeners, as you hear this scene from episode 4. Oh, Ed, go ahead. Something to add here?
Spoiler alert, but the scene you're about to hear occurs after the theater has been shut down and the artistic director makes a discovery.
Okay. Bay City Theater's artistic director, Lola Grant, is working late. We join her as she's on the phone with her partner.
Yes, Gabby. Just calling to let you know I'm copying a few documents before I head out. Yeah, I already reached everybody in the company, so I'll be right home. I promise. Love you. Bye. What is that? I know I'm hearing something.
Lola!
CJ! I sent everybody home. What is going on?
Lola, I can explain.
I hope so.
I have been working.
That's not the point. You shouldn't be here.
I give the dressing rooms a good scrub. I read online that it's important to keep germs from spreading. And I planned on getting to that back closet that looks like junk has been stacking up in there since Miley Cyrus was a virgin.
What are you doing here, CJ?
Okay. I'm going to be straight with you. I mean, not straight. You know what I mean.
Just tell me what is going on.
I was going to talk to you about it, but the damn virus dropped. Anyway, I was renting a room in Bernal, and I got a little behind.
This storage room looks like a suite at the Plaza, if it was decorated by Baz Luhrmann.
The roommate committee went all authoritarian, so I had to vacate. I just need to save up enough and find a place.
Aren't those the curtains from the production of Casa Valentina?
Yeah, they kind of went with the bedspread.
Oh, isn't that the tablecloth from...
Yeah, Sordid Lives.
Oh, I'm loving this vintage lamp.
From the Harvey Milk Show. That was before our time.
So you've been living here?
Kinda, yeah. Just a couple of days.
By yourself?
If you don't count the spirit of Charles Pierce, who keeps trying to dim the ghost light.
CJ!
I just needed a place, temporarily. Rents are off the charts. And finding someplace where roommates aren't afraid of someone new bringing in the virus. And finding a situation where I'm comfortable being me is not simple. There's only so many conversations I'm going to have explaining why I don't fit into somebody else's gender box. And I'm going to throw up if I hear one more person say, calling you they would make my English teacher twirl in her grave.
CJ. I'm gonna sit down. Is this a real chair?
Yeah.
I am so sorry this has been such a rough time. You know, the world isn't ready for us. I got the dark skin. You're non-binary. People don't know what to do with us. Or should I say, they think they do know what to do with us.
I'm not complaining.
Why not? Nothing changes if we don't complain, and out loud. CJ, I can't think of anyone in the company I like having on my team more than you.
I appreciate that, Lila.
I'm just sorry that we can't pay a salary commensurate with your abilities. Not to mention your mad decorating skills.
Well, there's things I can do while I'm here. I haven't begun to work on the light booth.
Relax, CJ. Under ordinary circumstances, I'm not sure I'd say this, but honestly, I'd rather you were staying here, listening to music, safe and not homeless. There's already too much of that.
Lola, I'm... This is really kind.
Well, just keep it between you and me. You have that sanitizing stuff and mask for yourself, right?
Oh, yeah.
We might be locked down for longer than people think.
How long?
That's the thing. Nobody knows.
Anything you want me to do, just say.
Don't worry. You're in charge of the ghost light. And take some money out of petty cash next time you go out. Buy us some extra toilet paper. Just in case.
Ashes hovering like snowflakes slumbering. Everything has changed.
You've just heard a scene from episode 4 of In Good Company, a podcast series running August 26th through October 21st by New Conservatory Theater Center. You're hearing Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are author and playwright Jewel Gomez and New Conservatory Theater Center director Ed Decker. Tell me a little bit more about how you developed this particular scene, if you would, Jewel.
Well, it was a very interesting scene for me because we had a confluence of things. One is, what does a young person do who's non-binary, who's suffering because the housemates that they had are not that keen on keeping them in their house. And so the stage manager has to find someplace to live, but it is the pandemic. And smartly, they figure out to sleep in the theater because everything you could possibly want is there from previous productions, you know, the bed, the curtains, the tables, the chairs. So it's a very, I think, touching scene about how people who are marginalized figure out how to make a home, and that Lola sympathizes and understands and is willing to stretch the rules to make sure that CJ does not end up on the street.
How is acting and directing actors different for audio than it is for the stage?
Well, first of all, let me just say that you need an amazing sound engineer and sound designer as part of your creative team to bring that world through to the audience through through listening and creating mood and energy and momentum and all of the sound effects that you would normally just sort of see and hear happening together in a theater space. You're only getting those orally with the radio play. I would also like to say that this piece was created, none of us were ever in the same room together, which was a really amazing learning experience. I've never directed a radio play before, and I've never directed remotely before. As were the writers, we were never in the same room together. All of the writers participated in outlining every single episode, and then as those sort of unfolded, folks sort of chose the episodes that they had the most affinity with. As far as the actors were concerned, that was all done through Zoom work and a special audio program called Clean Feed that helped us get a high quality sound. And it was a matter of us just figuring out how to, do it piece by piece. And we had provided all the actors with equipment for their setups at home, and our technical director talked them through all of that, and we got all the settings together, and we had our technical moments during the recording process, as you do. But, you know, at the same time, it was really invigorating. The actors in this podcast are absolutely sensational, gifted, talented, kind individuals, and were very, very keen to work through and discover how to make this podcast happen. And, you know, it's 10 episodes that they're about 15-minute episodes each. And when you add all of those up, you've really got a full-length play. And we didn't kind of put that together. We thought, oh, just doing these little 10 or 15-minute episodes, no big deal. We can do that, until we started getting into it and realizing how much material there was. And we did this all with between writing it and recording it within a 5-week period, which is unheard of when you're making a play. Of course, the post-production work has taken that amount of time as well, because the sound engineer has had to really fill out the world.
There is a lot to do in post-production, as I've learned doing my radio show from a home studio, believe me. So you mentioned there's 5 playwrights who worked on this. How do you keep the styles consistent, or do you need to, or do you even want to?
Oh, I bet. Yes. Well, I'm pondering the question. You know, it was a really an amazing thing that happened with in the writer's room. Is we were all concerned that we were going to have so many voices in the room, and that the characters would be stretched in a lot of sort of ways that wouldn't add up or mesh in the end, but we all got on the same page really quickly once we identified the characters that we were going to use. And Julie, you know, you can jump in here too, but it was amazing how everybody folded in and around and embraced those voices. And we did not have the problem of the voices straying or becoming disparate, or the story just sort of started to fit together and everybody was on the same page, as they say.
I think that there was a real important effort at the beginning, which Ed led, was to develop the characters, identify who they were, and really pin them down, then do the outline for each of the episodes. Then we would read each other's work, which was great. You know, you post it so you could maintain a certain kind of continuity, which was really easy, I think, once we identified all of the characters at the top, who they were, where they came from, what they were about, and that kind of thing. And it was very interesting. It was like an experimental play in a way, you know, because we were each going into it from a different angle. But I think what we got out of it was pretty solid and consistent.
Okay, great. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing the rest of it. How many episodes are already produced? Do you still have some that you're working on? Is the ending written?
Oh, yes, the ending is written. Yes, the ending is definitely written, Eric. Yes, we are, almost all the episodes are in the can. They are going to be released now weekly through October 21st. We are just putting the finishing touches on the final 2 episodes So yeah, we're excited, and already we're getting listeners from all over the world, which is sort of the upside of this crazy moment that we're living in, is that we're discovering ways in which our stories can reach a much broader audience than we ever dreamed possible. And I would imagine that these things that we're learning will be things that we will incorporate into the repertoire of storytelling at New Conservatory Theater Center when we are able to reopen. What a wonderful thing to be able to tell LGBTQ stories and move them to places all over the world that also need to hear them desperately.
That's good. That is one positive that comes out of that. So I do want to ask you a little bit more about this current situation we're in. Clearly, the pandemic is affecting not just theaters and other performance venues, but their artists, actors, set designers, directors, and for that matter, writers. So, Jewel, I know you write in for other types of media, not just plays. Does that diversification help protect you from the downturn?
I have a play due to New Conservatory very soon.
Okay. So,
and I can't, I try not to get anxious about, well, will the theater be able to open in time? I'm trying to write as if it will, because that could really, really kind of blow you out of the water if you keep pushing it back in your head.
Is this play Unpacking in P-Town, the one that's going to be next year's production next year?
It is Unpacking in P-Town. It's the third in a trilogy of plays about African-American artists in the first half of the 20th century. So that I've had to stay on track with that. But yeah, I do write other things. I'm working on a second, sequel to my vampire novel, The Guild of Stories. But you know what's so interesting? Everybody wants to do a Zoom reading. You sign up, a lot of writers are on the air, quote unquote, doing readings. So there's a lot of art going on around us that keeps me as a writer energized.
Well, that's good. And what about actors and set designers, directors? What kind of financial hardship are they going through right now? Ed, can you speak to that?
It's very devastating, Eric, especially for the set designers, costume designers, prop designers, all of those production elements that integrate with and collaborate with live theater. At NCTC, we're doing our very best to keep our core staff employed and hire as many artisans as we can to create work like this podcast series, the radio drama of Law of Attraction, which is coming up in October. That was a play that was meant for our next season, and Patricia Milton, the playwright, has adapted that now to a radio drama, and we've got some other commissions that are coming forward to also be in digital formats, because it looks like the theaters are not going to be opening for many months to come, still. And this is something, Eric, that theaters across the land are faced with, and around the globe, actually, that we're in a sense reinventing ourselves and finding the ways in which we can continue to make art and to support artists to the extent that is possible. And thankfully, at New Conservatory Theater Center, we have a strong family and a strong group of supporters that are continuing to stand with us and helping us through this very difficult time.
Jewel.
I did want to mention that all of the anxiety that was happening for people got further deepened by the death of George Floyd. And so that artists, in addition to their own personal anxiety, trying to keep their spirits up because of some horrific violence in our communities. And that, of course, entered into our story. But I would say that George Floyd's murder really threw a lot of us back. backward, you know. It was just so hard to take. And it continues, I think, to be hard to take. So we're hoping, you know, that there will be some social changes in the future and some progressive changes. And so that activism, I think, is also buoying us up a little bit.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean, it is one of these things that it seems like it's a monumental shift. And can this momentum keep going to make some real change? So crossing our fingers and more for that. Ed, do you have something else you wanted to add on to what Jewel had just said?
I know that the artisans that we work with and the colleagues in the theater all believe that art can help lead the way in this conversation that's going on in our world. And we're very, at New Conservatory Theater Center, we're always committed to that. And I think that that momentum around the country with theaters around the country is something that is going to be very helpful in supporting long lasting change at long last.
Thank you. One last question I wanted to ask you, Ed, about the, you mentioned the Law of Attraction coming up as a radio play, and I was curious to know if that's going to be broadcast on a radio station or, like In Good Company, will be a podcast that's available, you know, on your website and by download only.
That is a very good question, which I don't have a complete answer for, Eric, because I know that that platform is under discussion right now. My understanding is that, of course, that we want to make it as broadly available as possible. So, yes, definitely will be available on our website. But it is not certain as to sort of the podcast platforms that it will be available on at this moment.
You've been listening to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. I want to thank my guests, author and playwright Jewel Gomez and New Conservatory Theater Center Director Ed Decker. We've been talking about how theater companies are surviving the pandemic and specifically about In Good Company, NCTC's 10-part podcast drama about a small LGBTQ theater company surviving a pandemic. By the time you hear this, the first three episodes will have been posted. You can find them on many podcast platforms and on New Conservatory Theater Center's website, nctcsf.org. And Jewel, thanks again for joining me.
This was great. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much, Eric.
Speaking of podcasts, Out in the Bay is available on our website, outinthebay.org, and on Apple, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. You can subscribe to the podcasts and to our email newsletter on our site, outinthebay.org. We'd love to hear from you, too, so please send us an email, outinthebaysf@gmail.com, or leave a comment on our site or via Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, @outinthebaysf. And follow us and share, please. Building our numbers could help us secure funding. I want to thank my co-producers, Trick Nguyen and Kendra Klang. Hey, would you like to join our team? There are many ways we could use your talents in audio production, social media, program distribution, fundraising, and more. Let us know how you might be able to help. If things go well, volunteer help could become paid. If you're interested, please write to us, outinthebaysf@gmail.com. That's outinthebaysf@gmail.com. You may know, if you've been listening for a while, that Comcast California generously funded our summer relaunch, and we're so grateful. But these 10 weeks have passed, and now we need listener support to help sustain our service. We know it's a challenging time for many, but if you find value in what we do and can afford to chip in, please consider a gift of any size. Just click the donate button on our website, outinthebay.org. That's outinthebay.org. We thank you so much. I'm Eric Jansen. Thank you for joining us out in the Bay.